Welcome to Real Money Radio, the show that focuses on real people, real problems, and real solutions. Here's your host, certified financial planner, David Holland.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Another great show lined up for you, and I'm excited to welcome back Chris Martinson, PhD, co-founder of Peak Prosperity, peakprosperity.com. Lots of fees there. We're having Chris back because it was a great interview a few months back. It may be longer than that now. Time flies when you're having fun, right? So, yeah, so there he is. Welcome back, Chris. How you doing?
I'm doing very good, David. It's great to be back with you.
Excellent. Economic researcher, futurist, specializing in energy resource depletion. And again, of course, co-founder of peakprosperity.com, along with Adam Taggart. And I wanted to bring Chris back because he had some very interesting insights the last time we had him on the show. And from his vantage point and doing a lot of research on this precious blue marble we have and the finite resources that are available on our planet and what we will be doing about it and what we also can be looking at it from, not just a being green and being a good citizen of the earth and all those things, but also from a financial and economic standpoint and as investors. So I got to ask, there's been so much that's gone on since we talked, Chris. So we've got a quick, I know we won't get to all of this, but I'm going to go out of order a little bit of some of the things we plan on talking about. Because the one thing that was on the list that I know you wanted to talk about is something we have heard nothing about in the news. And it's Greece.
Not only Greece, sneaking into the news a little bit, but Italy, Spain.
Yeah.
It's astonishing what's going on. The European banking system right now is experiencing extraordinary stress. But Greece, you're right, has been absolutely out of the news, and it's in a capital D depression. It's in all of the same things that were commanding attention before. You know, Greece this, Greece that, ECB trying to pass a loan here, Greece, Greek banks that. All of those things are still happening. The Greek banks are still insolvent. And tack on top of that, Greece bearing the brunt of the front end of a very expensive and very disruptive refugee crisis being one of the ports of call for people who are sailing across that body of water.
Right.
And it is surprising, David, that we do not read more about it, because everything that you and I were talking about before that seemed so urgent is even more urgent now. I guess it just says there's even more urgent things we have to look at.
I suppose, Chris, this is a clear demonstration of how much the media, the dominant media system we have in the United States, does really influence what we know and how we act and what we know about things. And you know, I'm sure somewhere there that somebody will blame it's all Donald Trump's fault, but because he does like to suck all the oxygen out of the room. But it is, you know, the news cycle right now. And again, I'm sure there's, you know, plenty of different perspectives on this, but the news cycle right now is being dominated by, of course, the election, the economy, but it's our economy and it's the Fed and it's what will happen. And those things, and a little bit on the refugee thing, of course, and a little bit on the ongoing, you know, challenges with some of the immigration. But I literally just have not heard. I did have Greek for lunch yesterday, but that's about all I've heard of Greece lately.
Yeah. Well, they do a good salad, and but it's really astonishing what's happening over there. And by the way, I am convinced that the whole European circumstance at this point in time, particularly what we're seeing coming out of the banking sector over there in even more particular terms, what Deutsche Bank stock and earnings reports are telling us, there clearly is an opportunity for another fairly major financial crisis to come. And I'm convinced this time it's a little bit worse than 2008, or maybe a lot worse, because it will probably come with something worse than an institutional failure. It has the chance of a sovereign default to come with it. Those somehow are more psychologically, if not monetarily in aggregate, damaging. And there's some real clear candidates on the horizon, some of them in Europe, some of them in South America, most of them emerging markets. But it's really an astonishing thing that's been developing in the markets over the past, I don't know, 2 or 3 months now.
Well, you mentioned the emerging markets and some of these developing emerging countries and markets. A lot of that, of course, they are commodity dependent more so than maybe some of the more developed countries. And so you look at, you know, of course, some of the places in the Middle East, but you look at South America, Venezuela, Argentina. Venezuela, I do observe that they do have obviously a big dependence on their oil exports. So, you know, you're right. And so you've got kind of a collision between the low commodity prices for oil and the related, you know, energy supplies, and then some of the other social and tax and government policies. And and low economic activity. You do have a recipe for what could be a sovereign default. And I guess the question, the obvious question, Chris, is pick one, and what does that mean for us here in the United States, and what should we do about it?
Well, I'll pick Venezuela.
Okay.
It's a great place to start. It's been in the news, and a lot of people have run the calculations, and it's pretty clear that under current oil prices, which seem relatively stuck in the $30 range right now, that Venezuela is headed for a default. And that's, of course, compounded by they've got a political situation, as you mentioned, but also the way their economic and finance ministers are running things, as well as the central bank. Put it all together, doesn't look hopeful. They could have a default. People are beginning to prepare for that. Of course, there are a lot of banks that are exposed to that circumstance. People have already gotten in the United States, got caught short on the Puerto Rico default situation as well. And so once you get, David, once you get one of those defaults, certainly anybody who's accidentally holding any exposure to those bonds will get a haircut. But what happens next is that everybody sort of wakes up and says, wow, that's a possibility. And they look at the rest of the things in their portfolio and they get defensive.
And maybe even overreact.
Oh, maybe even. Yeah. But it's part of the dynamic. And so they start selling their Brazilian bonds. And so the interest rate starts going up for Brazilian bonds. And next thing you know, Brazil finds it can't stomach the interest costs, which makes things worse. So the interest rate goes up more. It's that negative part of the cycle. And this is where we have to understand is the positive side was the central banks of the developed world printing trillions, tens of trillions, flooding the world landscape. It made everything awesome on the way in, but it's decidedly not awesome when that same money comes flooding back out. That liquidity reversal started 7-8 months ago, and it's picking up pace, and it's with us. So people need to be aware that any exposure to these emerging markets, not just the sovereign bonds, but, oh my gosh, the growth in corporate bond aggregate amounts held by corporations in emerging markets, unfortunately denominated in dollars, is in the trillions and trillions of dollars. So it's tricky to always figure out who's exposed to that. But if you know you are, I would advise getting protection or getting out of those positions. But secondarily, sometimes if you don't quite know where the risk is, the safest thing is to just move the cash.
Right. That is a very simple and straightforward solution. And if not that, check your allocation and, you know, make sure. I had a gentleman come in the other day, Chris, and we got to go to a break, but he came in and he did not realize. He thought his portfolio was down because of some things happening with oil. And I did my analysis and his energy exposure was only 3%, but his Asian exposure between China, some of the developing countries in those markets, and also Japan, was at 30%. So, yeah, we got to check the allocations. If you're just joining us, Chris Martinson, PhD, is our guest today, co-founder of Peak Prosperity, peakprosperity.com. A lot of great stuff over on the website, by the way, educational videos, they got a seminar series, the Crash Course, and a book, The Crash Course, The Unsustainable Future of Our Economy, Energy, and the Environment. Great stuff to just, you know, get some different perspective, maybe insight you wouldn't otherwise get. Go to the website and check that out, peakprosperity.com. Quick break. We'll be right back with Chris.
Hello, this is Brenda Campbell, General Manager with Volusia Memorial Park and Funeral Home. We are committed to helping you with compassionate, professional, and personal service. When it comes to pre-planning for yourself or someone you love, a Dignity Memorial Provider is the name you can trust for all your funeral, cremation, cemetery, and memorial service needs. Recording them and sharing them with your loved ones will help ensure your final arrangements will be what you want, easing the burden on your family and friends. We can be reached at 386-673-5373 or our website, VolusiaMemorialFunerals.com. Volusia Memorial Funeral Home in Port Orange and Ormond Beach. Life well celebrated.
These are challenging times for investors. The stock market is volatile, with 10% drops a common historical occurrence. Is your financial portfolio prepared for such a correction? What about inflation? What's your plan when that gallon of milk or gallon of gasoline costs $16? And what about interest rates? Did you know that a 10-year bond could drop 10% if interest rates rose just 1%? What's your plan for that? Holland Financial has all the answers to questions like these and practical steps to help you hedge against these negative events. Call 671-PLAN or visit planstronger.com to schedule your one-on-one meeting with David Holland.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. We have Chris Martinson on the line with us, PhD, co-founder of Peak Prosperity. And, you know, I got to talk about it a little bit longer. And, you know, whenever you and I talk, Chris, we get into some of these things and we can't get to all of our topics. But I really think it's interesting that, you know, we start talking about a potential sovereign default. We look over, you know, across the pond and we start looking into some of the European Union. And one of the questions I've always had anytime we start talking about potential default or, you know, with, of course, with Greece and then Spain and Italy and some of these others, you know, if that happens... you know, we just haven't seen that, in the modern day. So, you know, if it's Greece or, good Lord, what if it's one of the bigger ones, Spain and Italy, you know, their economies are much bigger than Greece's. What really happens if they say, look, we can't pay it? What happens? I mean, you know, nobody's going to pull up a warship off the coast and says, well, we're going to take all your property. What happens?
Well, what happens is I think what is roundly feared in the halls of power, which is that you end up with a domino effect because what will happen, like, let's turn to Italy for a second. Shocking thing in the news over the past week, 18% of the loans in the banking system in Italy, non-performing loans, NPL, 18%. Mm. By definition, you have an insolvent banking system when 18% of your loans are non-performing. But, you know, David, people are loath to put things in the NPL category, so they hold off. And they have what they call our marginally performing loans is another... about 15%. So they're really at about a 30% flashing red warning zone.
Mm.
That means that their banking system's insolvent. Italy's government has no way of making up that amount. The only way to figure that out is you can't bail in your way to solvency. It's a very tricky situation. So they've been pretending it doesn't exist, but look at the price that people are still willing to buy Italian sovereign debt for. Negative yields, 10-year yields below the United States yields, I think that there's an opportunity there for a really ugly repricing of Italian sovereign debt as a consequence of the fact that their banking system will be recognized at some point as being largely insolvent. But when that happens, who's really holding the bag? Maybe it's Deutsche Bank. Maybe it's a French bank. We don't know. So the chance of that domino effect happening is very, very high. But just examining Italy, we can come to the conclusion there's a giant problem there, and I don't know how that's going to get resolved, given the fact that Brussels, politically, I don't know that there's a lot of appetite in Europe now for throwing hundreds of billions into any particular one banking system to bail them out.
Right. Well, I tell you, it does have a lot of hair on it. I mean, it's very complicated, and yeah, I guess my question, I'm not trying to push too hard on this, Chris, but help me understand it, because I just don't, not really got this work through in my mind. Let's say that Italy's, you know, there is this a problem with Italy, and is it that they just simply stop paying the debt, or they're not able to manage the debt? Any other country, for example, do they simply then have to, you know, come out of the euro and go back to their own? I mean, what functionally happens?
Oh, you're right. There is a lot of hair on this, and it's very, very difficult to figure out what will happen. We know how the rules are stood up right now, and the rules say that this is unsolvable as the rules are currently configured. And so there'll be some rule changing, and the rule changing might be that Italy defaults at some point in the future. It may well be that a few of its large banks go down, and they do the whole, well, we'll create a bad bank, and we'll try and isolate it. All that crazy stuff.
Okay.
But the bottom line is that there are huge amounts of derivatives that are now attached to all of these things. The big banks wrote all of these derivatives. There are things like credit default swaps on bank debt and credit default swaps on Italian debt. So if this turns out that Italy suddenly has a moment where it has to recognize it has a big institutional failure, all the banks are suddenly in trouble, or most of them, at that point, there's going to be really a lot of panic in the financial marketplace, because people like you and I won't know who really is holding the bag. They won't know where the risks are. There will be tremendous losses. On the derivative side, there's winners and losers, because those are zero-sum bets. But if the losers can't pay, then the winners don't collect, and the winners were counting on collecting, and then they owe somebody else. And just nobody wants this to get started. The problem has been that the banking system has not been fixed. We had an opportunity in 2008 to say, oh, we did some things wrong. We doubled down, not we, but the United States, but Europe. Everybody sort of doubled down in the system and said, let's just do that again. Mm. I think we're back to it.
Mm. So the implications, you know, it could spread worldwide. I get that. And there could be some hard choices that countries have to make. Is this, you know, again, with Germany's role and all of that in the euro, if you were to, you know, make predictions, and I know the caution about making predictions, but, you know, if we look out, maybe it can be staved off for some time, but, you know, do you see a European Union, or at least the one we have, the one we see in today's world, you know, 10, 20 years down the road, or is it just unsustainable with some of these inherent conflicts?
It's unsustainable for even, I think, just the financial and economic conflict we've been talking about. Greece is discovering, much to its dismay, that by agreeing to the austerity measures, they're really signing themselves up for a multi-generational series of pain, and it's not fixable easily, because a lot of the bright and talented people who can leave are leaving, because they don't want to be part of that, and it's very hard to get those people to come back. So, so you do some long-term social damage to your country, and there's long-term economic damage, and your property, plant, and equipment all degrades, and there's low investment, all these horrible things. And so that's what Greece is facing, and it would have been so much easier for Greece to attend to this if they had their own currency. A lot of people understand that.
And I think that's what I was really trying to get to, Chris. Thank you for putting the, you know, squarely on that subject, that really many of these might require these countries to adopt their own currencies or go back to that. And was it Poland that opted not to go on the euro and maintain their own? And that then, of course, is translated to them being able to insulate themselves somewhat and bolster their own economy with the exchange rates and all of that?
Yeah, and that's exactly the process. Or look at what Iceland did. They had a horrible banking crisis and climbed right out of it. Another place you hardly ever see in the news. But they, and I think I know why, they stiffed the bankers and got away with it. But they totally had 3 years of high inflation and mended themselves and are doing quite well now.
Interesting. Well, as they say, eventually the chickens come home to roost and you have to hit some of these things head on. And that's the realities of some of these debt issues. And I want to get to oil and gold and some other things. Let's grab the break now and we'll come back. Chris Martinson, ladies and gentlemen, PhD, co-founder of Peak Prosperity, peakprosperity.com. Quick break, right back with Chris.
Hi, I'm Teresa Ram with the Volusia Flagler YMCA. Our YMCA has 6 locations to help your family reach their health and fitness goals. Kids who play sports at the Y learn more than just the game. The programs provide positive, fun activities that build athletic, social, and interpersonal skills, which lead to better behavior, healthier lifestyles, and even improved academic achievement. For more information on how your Y can help with your health and wellness goals, check out www.vfymca.org.
Done right, done on time, or it's free. Holland Tax and Accounting Services, a division of Holland Financial, holds the same values our clients have trusted for almost 20 years. We have the financial expertise that will help you manage your business and personal financial priorities year-round, not just during tax season. Whether you are an individual or a business, Holland Tax can accommodate your needs for tax planning and preparation. For your business or personal finances, rely on Holland Tax and Accounting Services to deliver personal and detailed attention. Call 386-671-7526 to have your taxes done right, done on time, or it's free.
All right, we're back for more with Chris Martinson, PhD, co-founder of Peak Prosperity. Go to the website, peakprosperity.com. Lots more good stuff there to understand about some of these issues we're just touching on as quickly as we can, but getting to as much as we can with Chris and his valuable time. I want to talk, if we can, Chris, go to the other one that is often... it kind of goes through cycles how much we hear about it and it's talked about. And I can't avoid addressing this at least every now and then when I do some public speaking, and especially with investors and folks that hear me talk. And that is a question about gold, silver, other precious metals, and where those things are, what's happening with them, and, you know, some outlook for that. And the question I always get is about the advisability of including it in their portfolio. Either as part of their portfolio or as a strategic move to go more significantly into these items. And so where are we? I know that precious metals have come up a little bit here of late. Do we see that trend continuing, or is it really kind of hard to call?
Well, from a technical standpoint, both gold and silver have, on the charts, they've cleared their recent moving averages and formed these nice cup and handle formations and other chart things that might suggest that they put in a low for now. The recent strength has said that they are absolutely going in a different direction. Gold's a little more than silver, different direction than they have been. And I think I know why. You know, one of the old saws that I used to have to contend with people say, yeah, but gold doesn't pay any interest. But now I get to say, yeah, but at least it doesn't pay negative interest.
Right? That's true.
So that changes the dynamic quite a lot. And so I think it's got that as a tailwind. But certainly if you're following the financial stocks like I am, you see the weakness and the uncertainty. Gold always performs very well during periods of deep uncertainty, especially during a financial crisis. You really get some extra attention on that. So we've got that, and we've got a large fundamental reason to be interested in both gold and silver, which is the supply and demand, and particularly the supplies coming from the West and heading to the East and seemingly insatiable demand from the East. So I put all of that together. I've been a big proponent of having gold as a cornerstone of any portfolio, and I use it as an insurance policy. David, I'm not a gold does well during inflation periods kind of guy. It doesn't actually correlate very
That's
well
right.
to inflation
I agree with that.
At all, but it does beautifully. If you're worried at all about financial crises or systemic weakness or things that I think are now baked in the cake for our larger financial system, there's some earthquakes coming. I don't know how they'll resolve, whether it's one big one or a series of smaller ones, but there's some adjustments that have to happen. I think gold does very well under those circumstances. So for me, there's been a paucity of Western interest in gold that's going to pick up again, but the East has never slowed down. Just astonishing demand coming from that side. So, yeah, I'm a big fan of gold, particularly at this stage. Up almost $100 on the year so far, but it was coming off of a pretty low base.
Yeah, exactly. Interesting. Well, I tell people all the time, there's nothing wrong with looking at it as part of the portfolio. I'm a little reluctant to say, hey, take all of your IRA, like we might hear on television, and put it into all of it into gold. But, you know, hey, listen, everybody's got to do what it really is best for them, and they have to decide what they're comfortable with. Now, speaking of another area where we've seen coming off of lows is oil. And, you know, we've had this ongoing, really, I mean, it's volatile. And every time I look at the news and I'm going, wow, okay, it only was moved 1% or 2% today, but it's had some pretty significant swings. And I guess the biggest question I have is, you know, I get that it's lower because of all of the things, maybe less demand. And of course, everybody is at pumping at full capacity, and we have all the fracking and the more efficient technologies to get to it. So more supply, less demand. I get that, but what do you think is driving the increased volatility?
Well, this is clearly a story of speculators at this point in time. When we look at the amount of managed money hedge funds that are long or short oil at any one particular point in time, the amount of financial speculative interest in oil is very large. So you do tend to get whipsaws when you have a lot of people piling in long and short. They're leveraged futures positions. So the volatility doesn't surprise me.
Okay.
Particularly when you get to bottoms and tops, you do find more volatility. So I'm keenly watching this to see if we're putting in one of those volatile lows for oil. But at the same time, on the supply-demand standpoint, a couple big pieces of news that really stand out for me. One is that the United States Cushing oil terminal is nearing max capacity. If it fills up, oil price will fall dramatically, because if you're still pumping, and they will, and there's nowhere to put it, price is the only way that gets solved. It could be ugly there. But the second thing that really caught my eye, David, was hearing that China's diesel demand was down 5.6% year over year in December.
That's a lot.
Last month I have data for. That's a big drop.
Yeah, that's a big number.
Yeah, and they are right now the world's number one importer of oil. They surpassed the United States on that front a while ago. So seeing China, knowing where China is, understanding that China is very likely they're not growing at 6.9%, trust me on that.
Mm-hmm.
But seeing that China is really possibly going into a contractionary phase, that alone is very damaging for oil price outlook at this point.
Well, if you put all these things together, Chris, the next logical question, and you'll know exactly what I'm going to ask, and that is that if we put all this together, we've had our one quarter of 1% interest rate increase by the Fed. In my mind, the question I have, especially with seeing some of the softness of the earnings reports and with some of the labor market numbers, is there really a strong reason for the Fed to continue to raise rates at least for 2016? Are you seeing a compelling reason? Because I'm seeing that, hey, I'm not seeing a reason for them really to move too fast on this. What do you think about that?
Oh, goodness, David. No, I actually personally think that the possibility of a rate cut is much higher than the possibility of a rate hike at this particular stage. I think that they raised rates because they optically had backed themselves into a corner. They said they were going to do it sometime during 2015. Guess what? They waited to the last FOMC meeting in December to pull it off, and they did it in a very interesting way. They didn't actually really hike it. They hiked it to a new range.
I see.
Which
and
allowed
that's a short-term rate.
Yeah, the short-term rate, they used to be a range between 0 and 0.25, and it was actually hovering around 0.13, 13 basis points, and they hiked it to range between 0.25 and 0.5, which meant they really didn't have to move it far.
They only have to go up 12 like basis points if they go to the bottom end of the range.
Right.
Yeah. Well, so here's a thought. Tell me what you think of this. You know, they we've got, of course, short and long-term rates, and so they've moved up the short-term rate. They don't, of course, don't probably want to have to turn right around and cut that back down again, especially in light of what you said with the range numbers. Is it possible that we could have, dare I say it, more quantitative easing to keep long-term rates lower, which is the, you know, the printing of money and buying more bonds?
Something's coming. I think that instead of more QE, I'm an advocate of the idea that they'll try money for Main Street. I think that throwing more money into the big banking system hasn't really done much, if we're being honest about that, for the wider economy. It's done wonderful things for financial asset prices. But the thing that's really concerning to me here is we have the U.S. 10-year Treasury at 1.86 right now percent.
Yeah, yeah.
And, of course, we have the short end of this hovering between 0.25 and 0.5. That's a very flat yield curve. It's heavily distorted by Fed action, but a yield curve this flat is normally a recessionary indicator, but one thing that we know for sure, whether a recession or not is coming, is banks have a hard time making money on a flat yield curve.
Right.
And the bank stocks have been getting killed. And if the United States follows suit and moves to a negative interest rate, that is not just a yield flattener. It's actually like turbocharging it, because it's punishing banks for having any money on reserve by taking some of that away over time. That's the exact opposite of a steep yield curve.
So do banks want to lend in that environment? Does that encourage banks to lend or not?
Well, it's supposed to, but I'm of a mind that if you're not lending when you're getting your money at zero, why are you going to do it at minus 0.1? It will have some encouraging effect, but all we have to do, David, is look at what happened when Japan announced it. Their bank stocks have been getting crushed.
Yeah, yeah, I hear you. Well, we'll have to stay tuned and have you back, Chris, again. Chris Martinson, ladies and gentlemen, PhD, co-founder of Peak Prosperity, peakprosperity.com. Great seminar series there, the crash course in the book, The Crash Course, The Unsustainable Future of Our Economy, Energy, and the Environment. Reality check. Just one more thing to keep in mind as you look at your finances. Thank you very much for being with us, Chris. We appreciate it.
Thank you. The pleasure's been mine.
Today's edition of Real Money Radio has been brought to you by Holland Financial, conveniently located on Granada Boulevard in Ormond Beach. Could you benefit from a one-on-one confidential conversation with David Holland, or would you like a second opinion to make sure that you're on the right track? Call Holland Financial at 671-PLAN or visit us at planstronger.com to schedule your no-obligation consultation. David looks forward to discussing the financial issues that matter most to you. The host of Real Money Radio, David Holland, is a certified financial planner with over 20 years of experience. And because David provides advice to clients on a daily basis, his hyperactive compliance department wants us to tell you that David Holland is an investment advisor representative of Holland Advisory Services, a registered investment advisory firm. He offers insurance and annuity products through Holland Insurance Services. Commentary given during this radio program should not be considered investment, insurance, tax, or legal advice. Views expressed concerning specific securities are not an offer to buy or sell. Investment advice and planning services can only be given after an analysis of an individual situation and only where Holland Advisory Services is registered or exempt from registering. Real Money Radio is produced by Holland Productions.